Father David Yeager was the first Israeli-born priest of Jewish heritage. He worked with Pope John Paul II in his efforts to establish diplomatic relations between Israel and the Holy See. He spoke with Charles Collins about those efforts and also about Pope John Paul II and Jewish-Christian relations.
First of all, can you tell us why did Pope John Paul II take this initiative? Why was it important to him, do you think?
There are several factors. First is the conditions existed for it to be taken. For the first time, the government of Israel agreed to negotiate agreements on the status of the church in the state without first creating diplomatic relations. It agreed to treat diplomatic relations as one of several church-state issues to be settled. So the conditions were there. Next, of course, the Holy Father, like everyone else, was aware of the particular difficulties, sometimes growing difficulties, that the church in the Holy Land, specifically in Israel, was laboring under, as long as there were no church-state agreements to resolve the crucial issues. Then, of course, given all of that, it was evident from the very beginning of the pontificate that Pope John Paul II gave particular importance overall to the relations between the church and the Jewish people, and so would be eager to take advantage of opportunities to advance them.
Let's touch on that last point. How important do you think it was for the Holy See to have relations with Israel in the broader Catholic-Jewish dialogue?
Well, it certainly took one matter off the table. There were claims by certain Jewish organizations over many years as if the Holy See had been declining to have official relations with the State of Israel on theological grounds, as if the Catholic Church held that the Jewish people had been condemned to be eternal wanderers upon the face of the earth, and so on and so forth. This was, of course, always nonsense. It was an unworthy suspicion, and several times the Holy See said so, but it persisted unavoidably, and so by actually being able to have official relations with the State of Israel, that particular matter would no longer be an obstacle.
How much personal interest did Pope John Paul II take in this matter? And of course, it's all done with the Vatican diplomats, with back-channel moves. Did the Holy Father follow this closely? Was he in any way a part, not so much of the negotiations, but did he look into what was going on as the negotiations were happening? Was this something that he took a strong personal interest in?
The only ones who could answer that accurately would be Carlo Sodano and the other leaders of the Secretariat of State at the time. From my own lowly position as the legal advisor and negotiator for the delegation of the Holy See, it appeared that he did indeed. It was a new departure. It was not simply the updating of some concordat with the state with which the Holy See had had relations for centuries. And I assume that his address on the 11th of December 1993 to an academic meeting on Roman and canon law at the Lateran University bespoke the vision, an original personal vision that he had for the Church in the Holy Land and throughout the Middle East. In that address, which undergirds the negotiations and agreements with Israel and Palestine, too, is a call for the church in those lands to cease being regarded as a minority community, requiring or desiring some protection or tolerance, but to become a participant on a footing of equality in the life of those countries and those nations, with full civic equality for the members of the church. It is what sometimes academics call a paradigm shift, and it was very powerful because it stood on their head the modes of acting that had been in place for a very, very long time, and challenged those societies too to learn to relate to the church and to the Christian community and the Christian citizens in an entirely new manner. So this was an original speech. It spoke of an original approach. And I think this is the lasting imprint that Pope John Paul II left.
You say it was a challenge to these countries, to these communities. Was it also a challenge to the churches in these nations, the churches that perhaps had seen themselves as a community be protected and tolerated?
Well, of course, because the communities themselves of Christians necessarily interiorized over the centuries the manner in which they were regarded. So this was a challenge to the church and to the societies in which they lived to bring their relationship into a new era, into conformity with the vision that the Church of Vatican II, the Church of Gaudium et Spes, has of the relationship between the spiritual and the temporal societies.
Pope John Paul II also made a historic visit to the Holy Land. This happened after the conclusion of diplomatic relations. How significant was this event for the Israeli people, for example, and also for the Christians in the region?
The Holy Father's pilgrimage to the Holy Land took place in the year 2000, the Great Jubilee. It was some 7 years almost after the fundamental agreement with Israel and just after the basic agreement with the Palestinian nation. So it took place already in a context of a renewed relationship with both nations. In Israel specifically, it had a tremendous effect on the Jewish population. And it was possible to see day to day how the personality of John Paul II was truly conquering hearts and minds, to the point that on the last day of his pilgrimage, a public opinion poll found out that the vast majority of Jewish Israelis would elect him as their chief rabbi in preference to anyone else. This is explained, to my mind, by the fact that for the great majority of secular Israelis, who are the majority of the population, this was the first time that they met, as it were, a religious leader, a major religious leader, who did not preach exclusion, fanaticism, nationalism, violence, theocracy, that is, imposition of religious laws on everybody, but who preached love and justice and openness and liberty and equality. This upended everything they had always thought they knew about what religion means. and made him so devastatingly popular.
The Holy Father also made a major contribution for the small Hebrew-speaking community in the Holy Land. You're a member of this community itself. It's one of the smallest Catholic communities in the world. Can you tell us what he did for this community?
I don't know that it is as small as people often assume. After all, by Hebrew-speaking Catholics in Israel, we must mean not only the very, very few converts from Judaism in Israel, but also the tens of thousands of people who are not of Jewish origin, but who live in the midst of Jewish Hebrew-speaking society and share in its experiences. And the Holy Father, no doubt following 13th December 2001 summit he had called at the Vatican on the future of the Church in the Holy Land, and at which a call for that had been heard, the Holy Father took a significant first step towards endowing the Church with a visible structure, a properly ecclesial structure in Hebrew-speaking Israel, analogous to that of the older Arabic-speaking jurisdictions. John Paul II appointed, as a first step, an auxiliary bishop with special faculties for the Hebrew-speaking church in Israel, with faculties that approximated that authority to that of a diocesan bishop, and that one could easily see in one's mind maturing into a proper diocese with a proper diocesan bishop. It was a huge step forward. And unhappily, the bishop, a holy monk, Father Jean-Baptiste Curiot, died of a terrible disease not very long after his installation, and the post is still waiting to be filled today, and the initiative taken up once more, as the need is ever present. The Church, which is present even in Mongolia, to give but one example, is not present to Israel. There is not a Church authority that speaks to Israelis in their language and from within their own experience as a participant in the national life. And this is so important to the credibility of the Church. This is so important for the Church to be able to be heard, not necessarily agreed with, but at least genuinely heard, without being automatically dismissed as a foreign body by Hebrew-speaking Israelis. Those were the arguments brought before John Paul II, at that summit meeting, as is known, and no doubt when conditions are right for this, and this is for the Holy Father alone to judge, of course, this historic initiative may be taken up again and accomplished.
As a final question, looking back on his pontificate, what do you think is the most important thing that the Holy Father did in relations to the Church and the entire region of the Middle East?
First, what he did for the whole world. He ushered in truly a new era of hope and confidence. Be not afraid. Throw open your doors to Christ, resonated in the whole world. It gave confidence once more to Catholics who had been so bewildered by the loss of way on the part of so many in the years following the conclusion of the council. And this, of course, gave hope again also to believers in the lands where the Christian faith was first made known. It was this outsized personality, as journalists say, this bigger-than-life impact of this freedom-loving Pope striding on the world stage that gave confidence to all who suffered and were oppressed. Then there was the tremendous force of that personality, the sincerity that radiated from him. It's not enough to be sincere. You need to have that sincerity visible, and that radiated from him. This is what turned everybody's hearts to love him, Jews and Palestinians and others throughout the region. People trusted him. They trusted that he said what he meant, and he meant what he said. And that laid the foundation for an unprecedented openness to dialogue on all sides in the Middle East. And I think that is a lasting legacy on which the Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, has been able to build, to carry it forward. And this is, after all, what we celebrate about the late Pope. We do not celebrate a singularity, as if it were a comet that has vanished. We celebrate a foundation that was laid for the current pontificate to be as effective and as fruitful as it is being.